Good afternoon. I'm Lakshmi Bhairavasundaram from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. My talk today is about an analysis of data corruption in the storage stack. This is joint work with Garth Goodson from Network Appliance, Bianca Schroeder from the University of Toronto, and my advisors Andrea and Ramsey Arpachidiso, also from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Question that I often get about my research is, does data corruption really occur? So I'm very happy for myself and sad to tell you that it does. So I even have an example from my personal experience. This is a photo I stored on my laptop a few years ago. I don't claim to be great at taking photos, but I'm definitely not this bad. So I believe that this photo has gotten corrupted since when I stored it on my laptop. Interestingly, I do have proof that I stored an original photo. The thumbnail that Windows generated for the photo is still uncorrupted. There are some other interesting features to the corruption. I found that a few other photos in the same directory were corrupted. This might indicate some form of spatial locality to the data corruption. I also noticed a different file was just completely unreadable. It might be because the metadata of the file was corrupted, or maybe it indicated some form of latent sector errors that simply prevented me from reading the data. So that raises the question of whether corruption correlates with other disk errors. So in general, system designers in the industry know of very similar occurrences, and more often than not, data protection is often based on such anecdotes. However, anecdotes, while interesting and useful, are not enough in order to build efficient and effective data protection mechanisms. And therefore, we need a much more rigorous understanding. Our analysis of data corruption is the first large-scale study of data corruption involving more than 1.5 million disks in thousands of NetApp production storage systems. These systems were observed over a time period of 41 months starting January of 2004. And the reason we've been able to perform the study is that corruption was detected in the first place. The detection was performed by various data protection techniques, some of which I'll be talking about. And once the corruption is detected, it was reported to the Network Appliance Order Support database. Now, this database itself is simply a treasure trove of information. It has been used in two other studies, in studies of latent sector errors and study of disk and storage failures. It was actually presented earlier today. So given that there's so much data on data corruption, what are the different questions we can ask of it? The first question we ask is very simple. What are the different kinds of corruption that occur, and how often do they occur? Secondly, some people end up paying a lot of money for enterprise-class disks versus the cheaper nearline disks. So, you know, do they get something for going to a better disk class? Third question is, there are lots of disk drive products out there. Is there any different? Any different from the other? Next, given that there is corruption, are various corruption instances independent from each other? One could also ask, well, there was spatial locality in the anecdote. Do we really find spatial locality in the data? So this is the outline for the rest of my talk. I'll run through a background on various, you know, data corruptions that could occur and the protection techniques that are used to detect data corruption. Next, I'll go on and describe the results, and then some of the lessons that can be derived from these results, and then conclude. So data corruption is simply the state where data stored on a specific disk block is incorrect. There are various sources of data corruption. These are typically due to bugs, either in software or in firmware. Software bugs can range from ones in the file system, software RAID and device drivers. Firmware bugs can be in the disk drive, maybe the shelf controllers or the adapters. The most important feature, though, of data corruption is that corruption is silent. It is not reported by the disk drive or any other hardware component. And it is for this reason that corruption could have a much greater impact than other disk failures and errors, such as latent sector errors. There are various forms of data corruption. The one that we are most familiar with is bit corruption. This is the case where the contents of a specific disk block are modified, or the data being written to a disk block gets corrupted on the way. There are other more interesting errors, such as lost writes, where a disk write that was not performed is reported complete, or misdirected writes where data is written to the wrong disk or the wrong disk block. Or finally, one could have torn writes where data is only partially written but completion is reported. In order to detect all these forms of data corruption, one needs various protection techniques. I'll show a high-level view of an NetApp storage system and just run through protection techniques that are available at various layers. The different layers include the client interface, the waffle file system, the RAID layer, and finally the storage layer. Going bottom up, storage layer is in charge of storing and verifying checksums with each 4 kilobyte file system block. So therefore, it is capable of detecting a checksum mismatch with the data, and therefore detect bit corruptions or torn writes. Second, the RAID layer is in charge of generating parity and reconstructing data on any kind of failure. It is also in charge of performing periodic data scrubbing. Data scrubbing is simply reading all of the disk blocks in all disks, thereby checking the checksums at the storage layer, and also verifying parity. Therefore, one can detect a parity inconsistency when the parity does not match with the rest of the data blocks that belong to the RAID stripe. This in turn helps the system detect lost or misdirected writes, or sometimes even incorrect parity calculations in the first place. Third, at the waffle file system level, it stores and verifies what is called as a block identity. This is simply an inode number and an offset within the file that the disk block belongs to. And one can therefore detect an identity discrepancy as to what the in comparison to the file being read, and it can detect lost or misdirected writes. So there are three different protections, and therefore three different types of corruption that can be detected. Let's move on to the results. First simple question we are asking is, what is the percentage of disks that are affected by the different kinds of data corruption? We have three different types of corruption: checksum mismatches, parity inconsistencies, and identity discrepancies. And there are two different classes of disk drives, nearline disks and the more expensive enterprise class disks. And the overall observation is that, you know, the biggest number on the table there is 0.661% in 17 months. In comparison, this number is about 10 times fewer disks than those affected by latent sector errors in a similar time period. Second observation is that in comparing nearline disks and enterprise class disks, there is a whole order of magnitude difference. So nearline disks have a higher probability of developing corruption than enterprise class disks. Third, checksum mismatches, which correspond in turn to bit corruptions or torn writes, affect many more disks than the other kinds of corruption. So because of this imbalance, we will focus on checksum mismatches for the rest of the talk. So given that there's so much data, there are different analyses one can perform on the data, and we've chosen four different axes for the analysis. First one is the different kinds of factors that affect the development of checksum mismatches. We look at factors such as the disk class. We've already seen that nearline has a higher probability of developing checksum mismatches. Second one is a disk model, a disk age, disk size, and workload. We've also looked at different characteristics of the errors, including the number of checksum mismatches that are actually developed, given that a disk has mismatches. And we verified whether, you know, these mismatches have independence or any kind of locality. Next, we looked at correlations with three different errors: not ready conditions, latent sector errors, and system resets. Finally, we've looked at the request type that ends up discovering the mismatch, whether it was a data scrub or a file system read or a file system write, and so on. In the interest of time, I'll only describe the results in red here. First, we look at different factors that affect the development of checksum mismatches. So the question we are asking is, do disk class, model, or age affect the development of checksum mismatches? So I'll just briefly remind you that disk class is, you know, simply whether it belongs to a nearline class or an enterprise class. Disk model simply refers to a specific disk drive product, say vendor V's disk product P of a particular capacity. Disk age is simply the time in the field since ship date for the disk drive. at the system level, when we look at the factors, what we are trying to answer is, can we use any of these factors to determine corruption handling policies or mechanisms? For instance, if any of these categories match up, for a particular set of disks that seem to be more prone to corruption, we can use aggressive data scrubbing. So that's an example of how some study like this can be used. The graph here pertains to nearline disk drives. The x-axis is the disk age in months. And the y-axis is the percentage of disks that develop at least one checksum mismatch within the time period on the x-axis. The different lines in the graph here correspond to different disk drive models. First observation is that across these various different models, the fraction of disks that are affected in the period of time varies significantly. It varies from 0.27% to 3.5% in 17 months. Second, very importantly, for four out of the six nearline models, more than 3% of the disks are affected in the time period. This is a really significant number. Imagine, it's just 1.5 years' time, and 3% of the disks end up developing corruption. Third, we see that response to age varies significantly across the different models. We see that some disk models have an early burn-in where a lot of the disks develop corruption, whereas there are others where corruption appears much later. There's, of course, one disk drive model where the rate is constant over time. Looking at the same graph for enterprise-class disks, we note that, again, the fraction of disks affected varies significantly from 0% to 0.17%. Importantly, we note that all of these numbers are less than the lowest nearline number of 0.27%. Therefore, enterprise-class disks as a whole have a lower probability of developing corruptions than nearline disk drives. Second, similar to nearline disk drives, the response to age also varies across the different models. To summarize our study of the different factors, class and model matter. Specifically, nearline disks require greater attention from system designers. Second, we find that the effect of age is unclear, and therefore we cannot necessarily use any age-specific corruption handling policy or mechanism. Let us now look at different characteristics of checksum mismatches. First, let me define what a corrupt disk is. A corrupt disk is a disk with at least one checksum mismatch. So the question we are asking is, how many mismatches does a corrupt disk have? And at the system level, there are different disk replacement algorithms, and people want to know, should we fail out disk drives when the first corruption is detected? You know, why take a chance? So the graph here is again for nearline disk drives. The x-axis is the number of checksum mismatches. Note that it is not a linear scale. And the y-axis is the percentage of corrupt disks that develop up to x checksum mismatches. So the observation I'd like to make from the graph is that the number of checksum mismatches per corrupt disk is in general low. Specifically, 50% of the corrupt disks, you know, take the 50% point from the y-axis and see what the value is on the x-axis. We find that more than 50% of the corrupt disks have fewer than two checksum mismatches. Looking at 90% of the corrupt disks, they have fewer than 100 checksum mismatches. So it's pretty low in general. I mean, disks have millions of disk blocks. So if all of them were to become corrupt, this graph would look very different. We do find an anomaly, though. It pertains to disk model E1. It ends up developing quite a few checksum mismatches, and it's very different from the other disk models. Looking at the same graph for enterprise-class disks, we have an important observation. We know that enterprise clusters have a lower probability of developing corruptions. However, the number of corruptions per corrupt disk is higher than that of nearline drives. So the 50% number is now 10 checksum mismatches compared to 2 for nearline. And 90% of the corrupt disks have fewer than 200 checksum mismatches compared to 100 for nearline. Again, to summarize the study, again, class and model matter. Although fewer enterprise disks have checksum mismatches, those that do end up having more. Therefore, it is perhaps a good idea to simply fail out enterprise disks on the first checksum mismatch detected. Nearline does develop fewer checksum mismatches once the first checksum mismatch is developed. However, there can be anomalies such as this model E1. So any system designer would have to factor in these anomalies when designing policies and mechanisms. We also found many other interesting characteristics of checksum mismatches, including the fact that they have very high spatial locality. Specifically, when we look at disks that have multiple checksum mismatches, they are often for consecutive disk blocks. The second observation was that they have very high temporal locality. And third, you know, obviously, mismatches are not independent within the same disks. They are also not independent within different disks within the same storage system. So this, in turn, points to the fact the defect that leads to corruption may be in common hardware components, for example, a shelf controller. Let's now look at the request type analysis. So the question we are asking is, what are the different types of disk requests that detect checksum mismatches? At the system level, one wants to know, we have mechanisms such as data scrubbing. You know, are these mechanisms any use? So graph here has various disk models on the x-axis. To the end of the graph is the average for nearline and enterprise class disks. And the y-axis is the percentage of checksum mismatches that are discovered. The different colors pertain to different types of disk requests. The ones I would like to draw your attention to are scrubbing in red and RAID reconstruction in black. First, we find that data scrubbing ends up finding the most checksum mismatches. The number is 49% for nearline disks and 73% for enterprise class disks. Second, we find that RAID reconstruction actually finds checksum mismatches. It's a non-insignificant number. It's 9% for nearline disks and 4% for enterprise class disks. To summarize our study, data scrubbing appears to be very useful in detecting mismatches. However, a detailed study of scrub rates and workload would be needed to, you know, say something more. The distressing part is that some of the mismatches were found during reconstruction. This indicates that in the absence of double disk failure protection, these instances could have led to data loss. There's a lot of work in the area of double disk failure protection, and it is important to use them. The other observation is that maybe one could do aggressive scrubbing in order to avoid situations where there are double disk failures. So in addition to all of these, you know, typical studies, we ended up finding a lot of interesting behavior. First is that not all block numbers are created equal. The graph here shows the block number space of disk model E1 on the x-axis. And the y-axis is the number of disks that have a checksum mismatch at that specific block number. So this is a scatter plot with point for each block number. Typically, as one would expect, each block number has one disk at most where it is corrupt. However, there is a series of block numbers that are corrupt in many disks. So this raises a question of whether there was some kind of block number specific bug in some disk firmware or controller firmware that caused this problem. The problem, you know, extends beyond that series of block numbers to the rest of the disk as well. So we learn a lot of important lessons based on all of our results, and I'd like to run through some of them. The first simple lesson is data corruption does occur. You know, there's no doubt about it. Even rare errors like lost writes do occur. So corruption handling mechanisms are absolutely essential for storage systems and file systems. Second observation is that very few enterprise disks develop corruption, and if they do, they might end up developing lots of corruptions. So it might be a good idea to simply just, you know, fail out these disks on the first corruption. Third observation is that there was very high spatial locality. Therefore, it is important to spread out any redundant data that's within the same disk. Next, we found significant temporal locality. We also found that it is often consecutive disk blocks that are affected. So it is quite possible that maybe corruption occurs during the same write operation and ends up corrupting all of the disk blocks. So it is important to write redundant data with separate disk requests spaced over time and away from each other. Finally, we note that in weird cases, corruption could be block number specific. The figure here shows a RAID system. The different colors belong to different RAID stripes. So if the corruption could be block number specific, it is indeed possible that there could be corruptions to blocks that belong to the same RAID stripe, thereby causing data loss. So we suggest the use of staggered RAID stripes, which implies that there cannot be a correlated corruption that takes out all of the disk blocks in the RAID stripe. To conclude, our analysis is the first large-scale study of data corruption, and we looked at corruptions detected by NetApp production storage systems. We found that data corruptions do occur. They affect 10 times fewer disks than latent sector errors, but because of the nature of data corruption, it is perhaps still more difficult to handle that. And nearline disk drives are the most affected, and therefore corruption handling mechanisms are really essential, especially for nearline disks. Finally, we found many interesting characteristics for corruption errors, including the fact that they depend on disk class and disk model. Errors are not independent. They have very high spatial and temporal locality, and in some weird instances, may occur at specific block numbers. Thank you. For more information, you can refer to the websites here.
Lakshmi, I should remember this from your paper, but I don't. For when you talk about a particular disk model, does that mean a particular firmware rev also, or did you differentiate between those?
No, we didn't differentiate between firmware revisions, but you know, it's a great point that firmware revisions can indeed affect the kind of failures that could occur. We've just not looked at firmware revisions.
Sure. Yeah, it for future work, if you are able to do so, it might be very enlightening. We found that the firmware rev has a lot to say about the kinds of failures in particular disks. But thanks.
Yes. Thank you.
Lakshmi, I was curious about the you're talking about log number specific errors, and yet when I specifically asked some Seagate people last year based on a tutorial they gave about placements, you know. Can you say anything about the placement of your data on the hard drive? And they said no, because we're constantly reorganizing where the blocks are on the disk. So I found it really interesting that you actually found a particular drive, the E1 history drive, that consistently had the same block problems if they're not reorganizing the data on the disk. Can you say anything about that? I mean, that just seems peculiar.
So in general, all of these block numbers are logical block numbers. So therefore, we do not know based on the geometry of each drive, it could be placed at very different locations on the drive. We have no clue about that.
It does sound like a firmware error, then, since it's not some specific place in the drive.
Yeah, it's not a specific physical location. It's a logical location.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I was wondering if there was any information related to your study concerning the environment these systems were run in. So someone with a SATA-based system might have put it in the back closet in the hallway versus someone running an enterprise-grade system putting it in Ray's computer room floor for air conditioning and power conditioning.
It's definitely possible. We do not, you know, have precise information about environment conditions to make that call.
Dutch Iron, University of British Columbia. I had a pretty much the same question, so I'll let you go a little further. What about the fact that you're using entirely NetApp drives to study? I mean, I know they're from different manufacturers, but you're testing entirely NetApp systems. Do you think it's possible that that has any effect on the correlation between the variables?
So we found that, we did find that there is a significant change based on the disk drive model. So it's unlikely that, you know, the errors were due to anything that was not related to the disk drive model. So the disk drive model is not about the disk drive itself, but it's also about shelf controllers and other hardware components that, you know, control the disk drive. So the entire storage stack has a say on this. The belief is that there's no role played by the software.
Was there any correlation between the customer who's reporting the problem and the type of disk drives that were experiencing problems?
We didn't study that.
Bruce Worthington, Microsoft. You mentioned in your paper that you also observed at least one instance where a commonly written structure was happened to correlate to interesting blocks that were losing. I have heard at least, again, of anecdotal evidence of other situations where drive manufacturers have noticed, hey, if we keep beating the same thing over and over again, if this is the NTFS master file table or a super node, don't do that. Well, do we have any disk statistics, or have you heard of any disk statistics on the possibility of having overwrites? Maybe Eric can say something, but of overwrites actually affecting critical blocks, and so the necessity to then move this stuff around perhaps, or occasionally refresh it, or perhaps it's a vague question, but this really concerns us, right? We don't move stuff around, and should we?
Right, it's definitely a concern. For the most part, I would think that that would affect more physical errors. These corruption errors seem to be more due to firmware issues or software issues. So these are typically not affected by repeated, you know, accesses. However, since the workload in turn, you know, constantly accesses these blocks, it raises the probability of each of these things being affected more.